Welcome back to Exceptional Undergrads, a podcast where we interview successful students and explore how they achieve so much success at a young age. Be sure to check out our show notes at exceptionalundergrads.com and for all resources mentioned in today's episode. Today, I welcome Jaden Walton to the show. Jaden's a current senior at the University of Cincinnati. He currently serves as an entrepreneur in residence at UC, is a managing partner for Bearcat Ventures, and is currently on a team to create Motive, his sports management software startup. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Jaden Walton. Jaden, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm super excited to sit down with you. I'm interested in a lot of stuff that you've achieved so far, and I can't wait to hear what you have for the listeners today.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, like, the professionalism of this podcast, like, I've been on a few, and, like, the way you have things set up is great. I just want to throw that out there. So I'm excited to talk with you a little bit, too, about the things you've done.
I appreciate that. Would you like to start off and tell the audience about some of your recent accomplishments that you've had?
Yeah, the biggest thing recently would be Motive. It's a startup. It's a SaaS, enterprise SaaS company for sports management, specifically towards like high schools, and then we'll branch off from there. But yeah, we've won a couple pitch competitions now. We just got accepted into so I'm from the University of Cincinnati, accepted into their law clinic. So that's really cool, and we're really excited to have them help us with some contract drafting and going into FERPA laws, which is how you like govern this kind of stuff with high schools and whatnot. We placed at a hackathon, which was really cool. I'm not a tech person, completely business, but the tech people on our team really pulled through and had us placed at a hackathon.
Wow, that's amazing. I also noticed as well, we've spoken before as well, but you're the entrepreneur in residence for the University of Cincinnati. Could you tell us a little bit how you got that position and what you've learned from
that? Yeah, of course. I can start with, I totally glossed over this, but today, actually, we're sending out our email to our investment committee about our first investment for a venture capital fund we raised for the University of Cincinnati. So that's really cool and exciting. And that should be going out at 3 later today. But to back up a little bit and how I got the position, essentially, I went to UC and there was this intro class held by Professor Macari. He's great. And essentially, you have like a team of 15 students and you first do a SWOT analysis and then you have the second semester of you create your own product and then pitch it and then make prototypes and stuff like that and then also work with a nonprofit. So the first semester, I was the only one that volunteered to be the leader, the project manager. And so I won uncontested, so it was kind of cool. Made me think the semester was going to be difficult because no one else wanted to take that position. But we actually ended up getting the best grade he's ever given that class in 15 years. So like we would meet after school for hours and hours, where other teams didn't even meet after school at all. But on top of that, I just got addicted to that kind of experience of like leading a team, creating a business, doing SWOT analysis, like all these tangible results. Like we met with the VP of La Rose's, for their marketing and pitched to them. We got to go to La Rose's. It was a great experience. So after the first year of college, I was like talking to my advisors and I was like, how do I get more of this? I want more of this. How many classes can I take? And they're like, well, there's maybe one class that's semi-similar, but it's kind of on your own. And there's really not much else for that. And I was like, wow, if I'm going to be just taking high school 2.0, I don't know if I want to do college. So we get a new director of entrepreneurship, Kate Harmon, and she starts hosting some events. And then I start showing up to all these events that I can because I'm like, okay, this is how I get back into the game. And she's like, very early on, like this is my second or third event. I'm talking to students because the summer prior I got into a like accelerator, if you want to call it that. It's called Entrepreneurs Change the World, hosted by Centrifuge, which is Cincinnati's local kind of startup ecosystem part of it. And we got paired up with Adam Kaler, who exited Dotloop, first company, for over $100 million in Cincinnati. So that was a great experience to learn from him. Yeah. And then after that, I was like helping students from what I learned from him. Hey, did you think about this? Could you raise money this way? And she comes over, hey, do you want a job? And I was like, not really. And she was like, well, what if it was exactly what you're doing out there coaching a student? So I was like, oh, I was going to do it anyway. So sure, I'll do it with a title. That's how I got into that role. And actually, like, so I have my glass of water here. One of my first clients was Ecoponics, and they made me this. It's a coaster. But they sell sustainable, so it's completely out of wood instead of plastic like their competitors. Hydroponics, so growing plants inside. Think of basil and things like that, where you can grow plants and cook with them right there in your kitchen. It's about this big, say, and like that tall, so it's great.
As the entrepreneur in residence, you're helping out a bunch of different students as well with all their ventures. What would you say are some of the most common mistakes that you've noticed these young adults making?
Yeah, I would definitely say like imposter syndrome is definitely a common one. So my very first client, like professional engagement client, he sat down in the office and was like, I want to do a dumpster renting business. And I was like, I know nothing about that industry. I've never thought about the industry, but we'll figure it out. He now has contracts with the city where he operates out of and is like buying dumpsters. Like he's renting them out faster than he can buy them. And, you know, the first thing we did, we were like, he just started cold calling people. He's like, hey, do you need a dumpster? To like construction companies. And then he just to the city. And at that point, you know, and I've had other clients, but it's kind of like, am I qualified? Like there are people that have done this for 20, 30 years. Am I really qualified to do this? So he calls up the city, and this is a really great example of this. And he's like, you know, do you guys need any dumpsters? I've got a few dumpsters. They're like, we have an exclusivity contract, and, you know, thinking like, okay, but you've probably got hundreds of dumpsters, done this contract for years and everything else like that. So at that point, you know, a lot of people think, oh man, like it's very established. This company established, I'm just starting, blah, blah, blah. So a couple weeks later, I think maybe in a couple months, he got a call back from the city. Hey, they keep dropping the ball. How many dumpsters do you have? And he was like, how many do you need? And so they told him how many needed. And he was like, okay, I'll get them to you in a couple weeks. And they're like, awesome, great. And then we're like, okay, you have to buy this many dumpsters now. We got to figure out how to get to you this many dumpsters. So it was like, just getting out there and doing it is the best thing I can say. And like, maybe if you doubt yourself, don't doubt yourself that you can't do it. Like use that as inspiration to figure out how to do it.
Almost like asking yourself different questions. It's not the question of like, am I qualified to do this? It's how am I going to learn how to do this so that I can be even more qualified?
Exactly. That's exactly what I would say.
You also mentioned a little bit more before about this new company Motive that you're working on. Mm-hmm. What have been some of the lessons that you've learned from starting up your own SaaS company in comparison to some of the other stuff that you've done in the past?
Yeah. So I've mentored a SaaS company or two before, and I think this is just broader kind of mentality. Like this changed a little bit before I start this. So I'll give one big thing that changed going into this and then also that has developed and kind of reinforced. But I used to think that, you know, say CEO of a large company, I'm in Cincinnati, so I'll use P&G because that's our big company here, Kroger, P&G. But say the CEO of P&G steps down. Oh, well, then the COO will take place and then the next person will come up and then things will just operate as normal because, you know, the next best person's in line. Something I've learned is how influential individuals are. Like replacing the CEO with the next best person isn't like, it's not as easy said as done. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but the leader or just even the participants in any kind of organization have more influence than I can say any other factor. So going into Motive, here's my favorite story and why I will bet on this team forever. We had a chance to go out to Silicon Valley with the University of Cincinnati. there's five of us on this team and only two of us could go. So we got some money at this point from a grant and stuff like that. And we said, okay, you know, I think it would be, everyone has earned a spot to go to San Francisco, have a great time, meet great people, whatever that might be. And because I got told that I can only pick myself and one other person. I was like, I don't know how to do this. So I came up with a plan. We were all going to share like a hotel room, and then we'll have this much money per day to spend, and this is how much we can do on travel. Rent a car and try to do it on a couple thousand dollars. And I go and I'm pitching this to my team and everything else like that. And then unanimously, everyone on the team was like, I think that money would be better spent on hiring UI UX developers. So like they could get compensated, and this is kind of their first chance to get compensated for the many, many hours and late nights they put in. And the first thing they're thinking of is, how do we grow this more? Not how can I get something out of this? So again, going back to the people thing, that's going to be like the number one thing. Like once that happened, is like, okay, these people are really, really true and honest people. So I'm going to, and they're not just trying to get something out of this. They're trying to build something with everyone else.
That's something that I was just speaking with another person about, which is just teamwork and the importance of being able to work with the team and really being bought in. And this is actually something that another guy who I had on the podcast, his name was Bryce. I interviewed him the other day. He was telling me about how he went to Pennsylvania for a case competition, and that his team, it was the first time that he was ever in a team where everyone was really bought into the cause and working and driving towards all the stuff that they wanted, where the way that he put it was everybody would have different ideas on how to solve the case that they had. And it was never a matter of like, I just really want my idea to win. It was more of like, how can we get the team the best idea to win so that we can go and win this competition? They're all bought in, and then they ended up winning the competition, which was really cool. That's something that,
that's what I was going to ask.
It really, something that really stood out to me, especially because he also talked about with presenting about how he tried to differentiate with his team to be able to really stand out from other people. And he used, it was for Dick's Sporting Goods. He used the Dick's Sporting Goods like mantra or whatever it was that they had, the phrase that they were using. They used that on their first slide, and they really actually went in and behind the scenes went to try and really figure out exactly what would be great for them at the competition. And that all teamwork came together and had them have this big win. And I think that just shows the importance of being bought into a cause. And I think that's something that you're really trying to emphasize there with your team.
Yeah. What's his name again? Is it Brian?
Bryce Hopper.
Bryce. Oh, that's awesome. Bryce won, but good for him. That's great. I'm glad he got to get that experience too. Like something like that really excites me, because it sounds like from what I'm hearing you say, that everyone was intrinsically motivated, and being part of something like that is just like a magical experience. So that's phenomenal.
For sure. Well, let's shift back a little bit here. I want to take it back to before you had all this success and you've started up, like help co-found ventures and started and helped other people and entrepreneurs. I want to move back to a little bit before, maybe in college, maybe like your freshman year or like senior year of high school or so. What would you say were some of the primary activities that you were doing at that time? How were you different than you are today back then?
Yeah, for sure. So when I went into high school, I always kind of make the excuse I was a smart but lazy kid. I was a bum where I just like showed up to class. If I felt like I could have gotten an A if I tried, I didn't. I remember like I never failed a class in high school. I've gotten close, but in high school I never failed a class. In middle school I did fail one class. And it was a typing class. Like the easier the class, the more likely I was to fail because it didn't like simulate me. It was literally, we had to type every day. And so going off of that, I kind of like, I come from like not the best background. So, but I went to Loveland High School, which is a more wealthy high school. Like the average income's pretty high, but we didn't have that average income. Like I was definitely the bottom or near the bottom in income, but not to say I didn't have a very supporting mother and stuff like that. Like anything I wanted to do, I was supported. So And that's great. And I had other father figures in my life, absent of my actual father. So I think what really like helped me was, even though I didn't have like these great things in my life, I was able to see what was out there, especially through these father figures and stuff like that. And then going on to my junior year is when really I kicked it into high gear. I think it was a chemistry class I took, and I don't do chemistry. I don't do science. I find it so fascinating, but it's not what I'm great at. So I was like, I don't know if I could get an A in this class if I tried. So I tried, and I developed a good relationship with the teacher at the time. And I'm not kidding. She would not give me an A just to hope, like push me a little bit. Like she would just make sure she graded me as hard. Like she would give me an A if I did everything perfect, but she would dock point. Like it was great. I got like an 89.98 or something. It was crazy. She recommended me for honor society and everything else like that. So it's not like it was, you know, against me. But at that point, it's like, okay, I need to start. Never played an organized sport before that time. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do wrestling, which was like, if you're joining a sport, that's like one of the most grueling. And then I did football, and then I did ski and snowboard and swimming, and like track is my number one. Pole vaulting was my favorite. And then, so my junior year, something just clicked. I was like, okay, I didn't know if I could achieve that. There's so much more out there. And then this teacher came in from another school and started business classes. My plan was not to go to college at this point, really. Like, it's been thrown at me by some of these people in my life, but not like nothing was set in stone. And then I got on a national stock market simulation, got first place, got to talk to the board of Loveland to how these business classes are doing great and how I think they should be like a required, like everyone should have to take a financial literacy class. I was promoting this kind of thing. And then my teacher sits me down and is like, so what college are you going to? And I was like, I didn't think about it. I don't even know what, like, I don't know colleges because I'm first gen. So no one in my family has ever gone to college. And I was like, I don't even know how to apply to college. Like, I I can't even remember what it's called, like Common App. Never heard of that before, except a teacher said it in passing before. He's like, well, you like track? And I was like, yeah, I like track. It's awesome. He's like, you really like business? I was like, yeah, it's probably what I'm going to end up doing for the rest of my life. And he's like, go to UC. I was like, okay. So I applied to UC and I got in. I accidentally walked on campus one day looking for some kind of CPA kind of introduction thing. Like it was a seminar about why high schoolers should get interested in accounting becoming a CPA. And then, so I walked on campus, but didn't know I was like on campus. I got lost and I walked. So my really first introduction to campus was the first day of classes because it was COVID during that time. So the seminar was on, or whatever, the intro, whatever, was online. So the first time was me showing up to Lanier College of Business, even though my classes are online, because I was like, well, I'm paying for college. I might as well go there, you know, and I'll take a study room. I remember it was room 29. I would go in there every day in the morning, and I would leave at like, I'd get there like 6-7 in the morning. I'd leave at 8 at night, not for schoolwork, just because I do independent study and stuff like that. Cause like I'm in college now, I better pick it up. So yeah, that's definitely a huge transitional shift that I had.
Was there a specific moment besides this, like after this chemistry class, I guess you could say, that really mm-hmm. had you kick it into high gear and really switch your mindset? Because you mentioned the chemistry class is one thing of really just focusing up in that class, but then you took it a step further and decided to start becoming more active in sports and really started to up your classes and studying and whatnot. And then obviously things spiraled to where now you were able to go to college and whatnot. But was there anything specifically that you remember that really motivated you to actually start playing sports and to start doing well?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I probably can't pinpoint it, to be honest with you, exactly what it was. One thing I do remember, and I tell the story a lot when people are always like, you know, successful. And so something else I did, like I would go to Plato's Closet and buy clothes. Like, again, I had nice clothes provided to me sometimes by other people, but like people, when I first talked to them and before they got close to me, and now I'm very open about it, but people thought I came from a well background just because of how I dress and how I held myself and stuff like that. Because I purposely went out of my way to make it seem like I wasn't from a worse background than I was. Not to say I was absolutely horrible, but not nearly as well as these kids living in like 6-7 bedroom houses and stuff like that. Like, I'll go out of my way to try to dress up a little bit to make it not look like that. But I think a really big one was I went into wrestling. I was 150 pounds. And for those people that don't know wrestling, it's a weight class. So I remember I was new, so they paired me up with the 106 guy. I was like a foot taller than him, had three times the muscle, could lift three times more than him and everything else like that. I get down, I'm like, oh, this, why are they doing this? Like, I'm about to destroy this kid. He slams me to the ground, knocks the wind out of me, pins me. There is nothing I can do. This guy that's less than half my size is destroying. And I'm sitting there like he had me in like a cradle. And I'm like all bunched up and I'm like, I don't even know what to do. And just to be like, okay, there is something to this talent thing. Like, I have to develop myself because it's not going to be given to me at that point. Because I was like, genetically, like, you could argue that I was, like, taller, stronger, everything else. But because he developed his talent, there's nothing I could do. He could just beat me no matter what. So I think that was a pivotal moment. It was, like, at least athletically, is, like, I have to get my body in shape because it's not going to happen naturally. Like, I have to work on myself, which translated over into my academics and whatnot. But, yeah, I would say, like, getting, you know, hit a couple times and the wind knocked out of me and saying, like, okay, things aren't exactly going to be given to me. I have to work for them.
How are you able to develop that discipline to continue to switch up these habits and keep that same mindset? Keep developing that same mindset throughout the rest of your life after the sports?
Yeah. So I remember the most like quote unquote stressful period of my life was, I would wake up at 3 a.m. at 3:30. I would get on, or by 3:30, 4 o'clock, I would be in the pool at a YMCA cause our school didn't have a pool and we would swim in the morning. I would go to school, do a little homework before, you know, school started by the time we got done swimming. Right after that, I would go to track practice. Right after track practice, I would have robotics until 9 o'clock. And then I would go home and eat dinner, finish up my homework. And by then it would be like maybe 11, 12 o'clock. And I had to wake up at 3 to swim the next day. I have never gotten back to that discipline. That was probably like peak exponential growth in my life. But so like today, like, I think today I'm like refining things. So starting there, I mean, like I had no choice. I didn't show up to practice. I wouldn't be on the team. Like, and then I was working a part-time job at a local restaurant called Iron Chef Sushi Place. Half my paycheck went to buying sushi every day. So that was great. But, yeah. And then I remember one specific time I got off school and I was so tired. I was like ready to pass out. Like there would be times where I would like almost just pass out just cause I was so tired. And I just went 15 minutes before my shift starts. So I took 15 minutes and my mom was like trying to wake me up. And I was like, ah, I just need sleep. And she was like, you got to go to work. And I was like, you're right. After a long battle of her turning the lights on and, you know, trying to wake me up. And I just remember like, man, I'm really doing a lot here. And I was like, that 15 minutes of sleep was like so valuable to me. But like today, I think sleep is something that like, I know this sounds like such a small thing in life, but waking up at 6, so I try to wake up at 6 a.m. every morning. It works maybe 50% of the time. By the time it hits snooze, it's 7 o'clock, 7:30. But if I can wake up and like a couple days ago, I'm starting to research, how do I sleep? How do I stay on a good schedule? What do I eat before I go to bed? How do I, like, you're supposed to go outside and get natural sunlight as soon as you wake up. And that gets your like circadian rhythm properly in lockstep with how you want to be awake and stuff. So I'm trying to research like how to do that. And once I can, so I'm on small things now. I feel like discipline, like I don't drink alcohol. I don't smoke. I don't do any of that stuff. Cause my mentality is I'm going to the gym for this many hours of the day. I'm not going to, you know, ruin the results I get from that by doing these other habits. Now I'm like fixing my sleep schedule. So just constant improvement. Like after I fix my sleep schedule, I'm going to be like, I skip the gym more often than I should. Even though it's on my calendar, I always argue to myself I can get more schoolwork done. So just getting better and better on my schedule. Like there's always something to improve.
The sleep point is very interesting because that's the first thing that stood out to me in the story that you had. Waking up at 3 or so and then going to sleep at 11 and getting, what, 4-ish hours of sleep or so?
over a long period of time on a good night. I think that's actually, that's insane. I feel like you can, I've looked into a lot of the sleep stuff as well. And as soon as you talked about the circadian rhythm in the morning, getting the sunlight, it spikes your cortisol levels essentially. And then that gets a lot of the stuff through. I noticed as well, something that I've tried was trying to go to sleep at like the same time and sleep, waking up at about the exact same time, like every single day. And then just keeping that like same sort of rhythm so that you're in a good spot there. There's a ton of other studies. A guy named Professor Andrew Huberman, have you looked into any of his stuff?
Yes, I like him a lot.
I love a lot of his things. I actually just watched an episode with him. This is a different thing, but it was with David Goggins. The new episode with him, I think it was in, it came out like January or something like that. Maybe like a month ago or so at the time of us recording this, but it was a phenomenal episode. It gave me a bunch of different insight. But Huberman has a bunch of different podcasts on sleep, I'm pretty sure, and optimizing it. He has like basically everything for different science stuff. He's like the way that I just learn all the science stuff. So I could give people like the bro science version that I know, that's like a very step down from what he has. But I noticed that as well. Yeah, sleep. I could go on about just random sleep stuff for like forever. But I think a more important thing to do now is I wanted to ask, because I've noticed with a lot of exceptional undergrads that they usually have some sort of time, whether that be in the morning or in the afternoon or just some block of time where they're able to not change a lot of stuff. So for example, like in my morning that I've tried is I'll wake up at like around the same time. I'll usually like go to the gym or do some work, and then I'll have whatever my first class is. And a lot of the times it's like a very predictable thing where I'm limiting my inputs. Do you have any sort of routines like that that you do, or are you more of like a flow type person?
I feel like I am naturally a flow type person, and I'm trying to formate myself into becoming a little bit more structured. And not structured in the fact that I want to sit down and do X, Y, Z from here to here to here to here. It's like, I want to have time blocks for things I want to accomplish. However I go about accomplishing those is up to me, but I am dedicating this time to accomplish that. So like, for example, I'm like a Christian, so I read the Bible every morning, and that's something I do every day. And I have a little logger, and I keep track of it and everything else like that. And then like flipping totally from that to Duolingo, I do Duolingo. I'm on like 100 and something days, like 130 or something like that. And I'm just going to try to keep that as long as possible. And then day one or one day or something like that, it's a like journaling app. This is the one the Bible and Duolingo I can get every day, like without missing a step. The journaling is the one that messes me up the most, like that I'll miss, because in the morning I'm fine. I feel like besides the waking up, like once I wake up, I'm motivated to do those things because I have all the energy. But when it comes to the end of the day, like you're mentioning going to sleep at the same time, that's what messes me up the worst. Like last night, 10 o'clock's my bedtime. Like I should be out by 10 o'clock. I had an application due for a pitch competition. It's a big one where we get a lot of funding if we win. And then our school said they would pay for our travel and everything else like that for the team if we get accepted. And we didn't know about the pitch competition until yesterday morning, and I had to do my co-op and everything else. So I was up till like an 11 something before I turned it in. And then I stayed up because then I had to eat dinner really quick and try to. So yeah, my morning is becoming more structured, but getting that night going to sleep at the same time is going to be, once I get that structured, I'll be in a good spot.
That's something I still struggle with. The morning, like you said, is easy for me at this point. And I think an interesting thing that I feel like you might be able to try, and it's something that I've tried and actually made me implement this new habit that I've been doing for this year so far, but it's worked really well. It's a tactic called like habit stacking. It's basically whenever you have like a couple of habits and then you like sandwich one of the ones in between there so that you basically don't forget to do the habit. So what I did was in the mornings, I'll meditate and journal. I've been doing that for like forever at this point, probably like over 2 years, but I wanted to read for this new year. I wanted to read a book called The Daily Stoic by Ryan Holiday. It's just like one page of an entry about some sort of like stoicism thing and philosophy a day and how you could apply it. I was like, this is interesting. I've heard of some other stuff. I want to go for this. And what I ended up doing was just tacking it on as like another thing that I can do in the mornings. So I'll do all the stuff I have to do, meditate, journal, and then I'll read the rest of this book. And I can't move on to the next task unless I read that one page of the book. And it's such a simple task. Mm-hmm. That's one page that it's not too hard for me to overlook this stuff. So I think it could be good to try and put like read your Bible in the morning and then like do the journal app or whatever, and then do Duolingo. Cause I noticed I do that as well at night where I started journaling as well. And I actually, you brought up Duolingo. I've been doing Duolingo as well. I have like a 50 something.
What language?
Originally it was Japanese because I thought that it'd be like the craziest language for me to learn. And then I tacked on Spanish as well. So now I'm doing two languages at the same time.
Both, wow.
I had some previous experience with Spanish because I learned that from, you know, they taught me it in whatever it was, first to sixth grade and then eighth through high school or whatnot. So I had some experience with it. So I know some of the things. It's actually not that bad, but the Japanese is so random. I don't even know what's going on half the time, but it's super cool because it's just another challenge that I have in my life where it has nothing to do with any of the other stuff. And it's just purely for me to randomly learn things, which is cool.
Yeah.
But sandwiching that.
No, that's right, always great.
Is something that I would definitely look into.
I like how you bring up the challenge part. Like, I feel like half of it is like, you hear this from like David Goggins says this kind of several times, like, doing it just for the challenge is like, you know, just to make you like, so I think that's cool that you bring that up.
What was your motivation to start learning a different language?
So I'm dyslexic, like severe, like incredibly dyslexic. Like everything is run through Grammarly that I write. So I figured, you know, what can I do that would make me hate myself as much as possible? Let me learn another language. So yeah, that's what I did. But what was kind of great about Spanish is it's a lot more, like, being dyslexic, I try to sound everything out, and half the words in the English language, like, you can't sound out. So it's like there, and there. It's like, you know. But in Spanish, it's a lot better. Like, you can sound out things a lot better. So it actually ended up kind of being easier for me than English to learn. But yeah, I mean, I just said I'm dyslexic, so I need to try to do anything I can to mitigate that.
I feel like
I have no like research backing of this either. That's just me. this could be making it worse. I have no clue. It's not like, but you know, I just said that's what I'm going to do.
That's good. It's just like the extra challenge, like you said, just doing it because it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that you have done in your life or you're doing now that you just kind of do specifically to challenge yourself? So I feel like having some sort of discipline and pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, especially daily, can really build you and develop you into a better person.
I've gone to there's this chart I made from someone I spoke with a while ago, kind of like a mentor at UC, who's actually now an adjunct professor, but it's like a time diagram. We talked about it last time, the time input versus the outcome.
With the boxes.
So I've kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've kind of focused my time on, I'll do recreational things like for difficulty, but if it's something that I'm spending my time for improvement of whatever I want to do, instead of trying to do what I want to do, I'm going to be outcome driven instead of like input driven. So like, what's going to be the most efficient thing? So if it's difficult, it's difficult. If it's easy, it's easy. Like, I don't care as long as it helps me achieve what I'm trying to achieve. But like a mentality thing that I do, for example, if I wake up late, definitely, like, it's been freezing here in Cincinnati. Not today. It's like 60. It's actually great outside. Almost 60. But I won't wear a jacket that day, and I'll just go on a t-shirt because I was weak and woke up late. So it'll be like 19 degrees or even 12 or whatever. It'll be snowing, and I'll just be out there with a t-shirt and a pair of jeans. Because I was a wimp and didn't wake up on time, so I punish myself by being freezing all day.
Haven't heard that one before, but I like it. It's like a repercussion just because you didn't just get up. So the next day, does it work pretty well? You get up well?
Well, kind of, but kind of not, because, like, I've been wanting to take ice baths, so it's, I can argue it's a transition to ice baths. It doesn't wake me up as much as I'd want it to. Like, a great alarm clock that I delete sometimes in the morning because I don't want to use it when it goes off is Alarmy. You have to, like, do math problems to turn off the alarm, or you have to, like, do memory problems to turn off the alarm. That's probably been one of the most helpful things to consistently wake me up, because it's like I have to sit there and use my brain, because as soon as I'm conscious, like, I feel like as soon as I'm conscious, I'm awake. But, like, if I can just hit snooze, like, sleeping me is going to do that without telling awake me, and then I'm just going to be asleep for an extra hour.
What other things have you used outside of, like, this tip? Like, it's almost like a productivity tip in a sense of, like, immediately getting your day started. Do you have any sort of thing that you do like that to get yourself to start doing a habit or start doing something that you're working on for school or for your businesses?
Yes. I am very influenced by hearing, like, cool stories and, like, tough stories. And, like, as soon as I hear, like, you know, like, Joe Rogan, David Goggins, like, as soon as I was, like, listening, I was like, what am I doing? I'm sitting here listening to a podcast. I should be doing the work. I like, go to the gym. Like, I'm very influenced by, like, listening to stories. So that's something I'll purposely be like, I feel so lazy. And then I'll be like, all right, I'm listening to, like, so, like, right now I'm listening to, I think it's the Lex Fridman with, he writes biographies for people, and it's, like, Elon Musk and stuff like that. And I'm listening to him talk about how he, like, is like, when Elon Musk walked in for Twitter the first day, and he did, and it was like, okay, stop being lazy. I need to work on my business. Like, that's something I do. But I also, like on my notebook here, and this is something new I've done only for, like, 2 weeks now, but it's been very, very, very helpful. So I have my time cut out throughout the day. Like, I'm going to work from this time to this time. I'm going to work out from this time to this time and eat from this time to this time. And then I make a list. And this is something I heard. It was a consulting story, which I'll get into. I just make a list. It's like, I want to, if I get any free time, if I finish a task early, whatever it might be, I'm going in order in this list. And then every day, even if I don't accomplish things from the previous day, I'll rewrite it the next day to make me be like, I didn't accomplish that yesterday. And in this order, I'm accomplishing these things. And if I don't accomplish it, I have to rewrite. Like, I hate wasting paper. Even though I have a million notebooks, it's like, man, I'm wasting more lines on my notebook to rewrite these things. I need to get them done. Like, small things like that is what I do.
So it's like, oh, go ahead. Yeah, no, you got it.
I was just going to say, and then the consulting story. I mean, that really came, I can't remember. I'm going to butcher this so bad, but the concept is there, right? A consultant group went to the CEO because the board of directors, like, forced him to get a consultant to be more efficient. Cause he was getting like 600K more a year. This is years ago. So that was like millions today. Anyways. And this consultant walked around, followed him, everything, took down notes, and it was supposed to be a week long consultancy. And after like a fourth day, he's like, I have one piece of advice for you. I want you to write six things every morning. Cause you get called every day to put out like three or four fires. And then you have to figure out where you're going. I want you to write six things each day. And you can have a big list somewhere else, but six things you want to accomplish each day. And you just go right back in place. Every time you get called into a special meeting, to put out a fire, whatever it might be, you just go right back in order. And we're not going to charge you for these, because I'm cutting it short. I'm not going to charge you for these days. In a month from now, you do this. I want you to write me a check for how much you think that advice was worth. And he's like, this is dumb. You followed me and you think you, yeah, get out. I'm not paying you. Like, but his board of advisors made him do this list thing because they said, do it. And then he got a check in the mail for his, like, yearly salary. So, like, it was a lot. It was worth a lot. The most simple thing made him so much more productive. Like, just staying in order and having a list of things to do. It's like, and that's what I try to do. So I make a list every day and I try to, you know, accomplish whatever I can.
I wrote to-do lists for myself every single night for like a long time. And then I stopped abruptly like a week or two ago because I felt like I wasn't looking at it enough. And I noticed myself this past week whenever I didn't have any to-do lists, that I almost felt a little bit lost about like exactly what I should be doing. So I pulled it out again today and I was like, You have to write to-do lists. You have to do this. And I usually, what I would do is, like you said, I usually list out like a lot of what I had for the day and then certain things that I might have wanted to accomplish. But I think putting them in like a chronological order and then sticking to that order. And actually, I like that you make it, that you said, especially in the story where it's like, just write down six things. Because what I'd find myself doing sometimes is write down all the stuff that I'd want to do or whatever. And then I would miss certain things. And it would be like lower leverage tasks, like talking about how I want to, can you send me the picture of the chart that you have? Because I want to throw that in.
Yeah.
You don't have to do it right now. Just at some point. Because
I'm going to add it to my task list today.
You love it. But I think it goes back to the chart that we're going to throw in right over here that you were showing me the other day, which is like figuring out what would be like the highest leverage tasks that you can do, or the higher leverage ones. And if you do those ones and you only write down like the six things in order of how you're going to do them, the most important tasks that you can do, I feel like that's just going to increase your productivity and your efficiency, because there's no sort of like, what am I going to do? It's like, just go back to the list. And then I really liked the, I have to keep writing the same thing down if I haven't done it, because that's something for me where if I haven't done something, there's one thing to just kind of like scratch it off anyways or something and be like, yeah, it's who cares. But if you have to like manually write the thing down, you're going to get so annoyed of having to write down the exact same thing. It's like, it probably would just take less effort at this point to just do the actual task and not have to worry about writing it down every single day. I think that's really, that's really good. That's something I really want to try now, especially getting back to the to-do lists.
I don't know, maybe at night works for you, but I do it in the morning because, again, like for me, I need something to really motivate me to be like, okay, I'm putting my headphones in and not talking to anyone and getting this done. So in the morning, it's like, oh, I get accomplished. Like, so like one thing that sticks out to me is like, if I wake up an hour late every day, do you know how many things on my to-do list? Like, I get emails out for the entire day in just that 1 hour. Like, it builds up so much, and I don't have to rewrite that every day. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, so in the morning, it energizes me. So for example, like, I'm buying a calendar. So every day I wake up on time, I'm circling that day, right? Because that's a big thing I'm working on. And like, I didn't want to spend the money on my calendar, because the way I divvy up my income is I can only spend X amount of money on like, I call it fun things. It's 17.5% of my income. But I'm like, I don't really want to take it. I'd rather go out to eat. And I was like, if I can spend, say, $10 for a calendar and get an hour every day of my life back, like, I can make more than $10 an hour working my job an extra hour. Like, that's the way I'm starting to think about things, is like, if the calendar costs me $200 by the course of a month or two, a week, whatever it might be, whatever increased productivity comes out of that, I'd spend $1,000 to do it, if that makes sense. Like, it's not I'm buying a calendar, it's I'm buying an extra hour of every day. At least that's how I see it.
How much do you, or I guess a better question would be, how have you learned more of this like financial literacy stuff, and what tips would you have for people on that? Because you just mentioned 17.5% of your income goes towards fun things. Like, you've got this dialed in. I want to hear what tips you have, because that seems extremely specified. Like, you've got like sheets and whatnot, and you've studied some of this stuff.
I mean, I started again in high school just doing all this stuff, and I'm just kind of obsessed with like, when other people might go to the bowling alley or hang out at a bar or something like that for fun, I get with my friends and we talk about dividend stocks, or like, I am the most nerdy, like, for YouTube, I'm watching like Economics Explained. Like, that's what I do for fun. So it's kind of just like, it's not something I have to do. It's something like, oh, I get to do, I get to be like, so I do like Webull for savings account because I get 5% interest on it. And then every day it shows you how much, like daily, how much interest you earned. Like, I'm probably a little too bad on it, but every day I'm like, okay, I earned this much interest. Awesome. Like, say I earn like $1 a day, for example. It's like, okay, over the course of a year, I'm going to make $365 reinvested into that savings account. I'm going to make this one. Like, it's fun for me. Like, I do that for fun, not because I have to. So that's kind of like a cheat code, I would say. And I just, It wasn't always that way. Like, I used to, what was it? Van something. Like, I used to watch this one guy, he played video games. And then I would sprinkle in, so, like, every day I listen to, like, a podcast, like, Morning Brew podcast, or, like, the PDB, the President's Daily Brief. And that's entertainment for me now. But it was a slow transition. Like, I used to listen to, like, fun things, music, and then I'd be like, whenever I could muster up the courage to do it, I would, all right, I'm going to listen to a podcast driving to this place. And then it just, now it's everyone, like, now it's pretty much when there are other people in the car, like if I'm driving to dinner or whatever, then I'll play music because I have to, not because I want to, because it's weird to listen to a podcast on your way to dinner. But now, like, I want to listen to these podcasts. I want to listen to these educational podcasts instead of music. I would just say it's a slow transition. It takes time. I wouldn't rush into it because then, like, so I'm a managing partner for venture capital at UC. It's very easy to not be emotional with other people's money. When you get into your own money, it's not, like, even if I got my financial advisor's license and everything else like that, I would still hire another financial advisor when I get to that point in my life to manage my money, because they're, like, I'm going to take emotion into my money. So taking emotion out of the equation, making it like an educational journey. So I know that was like the longest answer ever, but yeah, if you don't know anything about stocks, just slowly, like, again, Webull, not that I'm like sponsored by them or anything, but like, you get the savings account, high yield, you get that instant gratification of seeing your money compound daily, and they give you some free stocks. If you don't know anything about stocks, just get the free stocks and watch it every day. Oh, it went up. Maybe look up why. So I think I got like, I don't know. I'm going to use BP because I like that was a good stock for me to just learn from. It would go up one day and I'd just search, why did BP go up this day? Like, I didn't buy more. I didn't sell it. Even if it went up to $1,000, it went to zero. Didn't care. Just every day I would be like, why'd it go up? Why'd it go down? And then I just slowly started learning more.
What podcasts are you listening to that have really helped you develop these skills, like for financial literacy or for entrepreneurship or whichever ones you think would be applicable?
Yeah, I probably took the least efficient route in doing this. I would listen to all these like fake financial, I'm talking like high school at this point, all these fake financial gurus that would tell you could drop ship and make $1 million tomorrow. And I kind of sniffed through that wasn't exactly realistic. But I just kept watching those videos and stuff like that. Like Graham Stephan, like when you can learn these things in a non-boring, fun manner, the fundamentals, like what Graham Stephan, Caleb Hammer, awesome. Okay, I would say Caleb Hammer is the best entry because he's, do you know Caleb Hammer? Have you seen his videos?
I have not. I've heard of Graham Stephan.
Oh, financial audit. Yeah, yeah. So he's a good one too. I think he's like next level. He talks about more complex things than Caleb Hammer. Like if you don't know anything about finances and you want to get into it, he gets like millennials or even like Gen Z now, gets their financials and just tears them apart. Like absolutely tears them apart, yells at them and everything else like that.
Wait, is this the guy who, you know what I'm talking about? I've seen like videos and it'll be like, wait, why did you spend like $300 on this shirt or something like that? And you're like,
yes.
Okay, yeah. Yes. I didn't know his name, but yes, I've seen this. That's hilarious.
Yes. Great intro. And then from there, like I could start there and it's a step. Like I would never say like, I listened to like, 20-minute VC or the All In podcast. That's like they're talking about Federal Reserve banking and interest rates and like how the wars going on right now are affecting trade routes. Like that's advanced, relatively advanced stuff, right? Or how like the venture capital environment is trickling down or it's getting affected by interest rates going like too far. You work your way up there, but like Caleb Hammer, Graham Stephan, learn a little bit about housing, mortgages, and just like, depending on how, because that's not for everyone. 99% of people probably aren't going to get into venture capital. Like that's such a financial, like sophisticated financial vehicle, maybe later in life, but private equity and stuff like that, like start small and just keep going in whatever path you find interesting. Because at that point, I'm like, you learn it for fun. Definitely. If that's not your, if you're not in the business career, like if you're like a doctor or if you work at like McDonald's or if you're an accountant, like those things are kind of just fun to learn and you could get into them if you'd like.
Do you have any books that you would recommend people read for venture capital or from the entrepreneurship perspective? I know you're obviously a managing partner in one of these.
Yes, let me grab them. I think I showed you them last time, but I'm going to grab them really quick again. This one and this one. First, the number one book I can recommend, which I don't even have the physical book because I wanted to make sure I learned this one. Being dyslexic, I made sure it was an audiobook for me. The Leadership Challenge. I don't agree, like, just like any book anyone reads. I don't agree with everything that's said in the book, and some principles I don't enact personally, but having the Leadership Challenge, like reading that book and actually thinking about it, like take your time. Don't try to read the book in one sitting. Like read a chapter and then think about what was just said in that chapter. It puts leaders in perspective. Like any, like even from when I was, you know, waiting tables or even a busser, like, oh, why is the manager doing this? That's so dumb. Because from my perspective of like, oh, I don't want to work Saturday or I want to work Saturday or whatever, and they're not letting me call off or they're not letting me do this. It's like, that's so dumb. They should do that. It's like not that big of a deal. I'm just waiting tables. The Leadership Challenge puts in perspective like why you can start understanding why your managers or your professors or anyone that's in some sort of leadership position, which almost everyone is at some aspect of their life, even if it's just leading a D&D club or whatever. You get to understand the position and put into context that other leaders are in, like even your professors and stuff. So number one book I would just read in general. And then if you're trying to get into venture capital, the venture capital side would definitely be Venture Capital Strategy. It's the Razor Method. This guy is actually the one that created the VCIC, the competition we just recently competed in. And yeah, this is how you're going to learn VC. A great introduction. And then you just, you know, like this is like learning your Caleb Hamer, but for VC. It reads like a textbook though. So be prepared to be bored. I find it interesting, but be prepared to be reading about a little bit of math and there's some stories sprinkled in too. So, as an entrepreneur, a good book to read would be Get Backed. It talks a lot about like the guy's journey that wrote the book of trying to do a startup, talks about pitch decks, how to talk to investors, the different ways to get investors, and puts a lot of things in context. So I just opened up to a random page here and Beacon, I think. Yeah. Beacon. It's I don't even know what this is. But it's like they raised $6 million. They had 5 meetings from East Coast and West Coast, and they had 5 investors. And then I can go to the next one where they raised half the amount with 3 times the meetings, or 3 times the investors, like 10 times the meetings. They had 50 meetings to convince 15 people. So they probably got like – this really puts, for entrepreneurs, it puts in perspective of like what that back end kind of like get back, kind of how that process of getting back financially works.
Fantastic. I will definitely check those out and provide links and whatnot for all the different stuff. One thing that I noticed, and I looked over, I prepared of course for this, and I looked over your LinkedIn profile, and what you actually said in one of the forums as well, is a specific phrase that I found interesting that I really want to hear about. It said it's your goal. So it's your goal is to raise the standard of living for all people to the best of your ability. How did you come up with this goal? What does it mean to you? What's motivating you to achieve it? Just give me some insight on this. I found it super interesting.
Yeah. I had like 3 quotes I came up with while waiting tables. I don't know why. That's just, I just thought of quotes while waiting tables. And I'm talking like I was younger at this point. Like 16, 17, maybe 15. I think 14, I became a busser, and 15, 16, 17, I think I was waiting tables. So my first quote I ever came up with was like, you can learn everything and have everything. You can learn nothing and have nothing. And then there's everything in the middle. And then I came up with the quote that's on my Instagram, which is, be scared to fail, but be more scared to not succeed. Which I think is pretty cool. But and then this one, my goal is to raise the standard of living for as many people as possible. I just feel like it's kind of like, what else am I going to do with my time? I mean, like, I don't know. Like, there's, I don't know if there's really a philosophical kind of background to it. It's like, because when you break it down, like, again, even when I was waiting tables, I was like, I want to be, like, not that I was, because the first day I waited tables, I got a text was like, do you want to tonight from one of the other servers? Because I guess someone called off. I was like, do I want to what? Like, what do you mean? It's like, do you want to come in tonight and work? And I was like, yeah. And I was like, okay, wear dark clothes and then you can wait tables. And I was like, awesome. And I was horrible at it, right? Because I didn't learn the kiosk system. I didn't know where, like, I'd have one table and take me like 5 minutes to punch in an order. So for all my people that are waiting tables out there, they know exactly what I'm talking about. But I just figured, like, I am providing a good or service for society. Like, I've always thought about it in this grand kind of scale. It's like, I'm going to try to be the best at whatever I do. Because at the end of the day, like, even if I'm just waiting tables, which is not just waiting tables, you're providing a great experience for someone else. Even if you're just like a valet or whatever small job you think you have, it has a huge impact on the whole world and the economy and everything else like that. So I always think just be the best that you can so I can provide for society as much as possible. And then when you look at it from an economic scale point, like, that like, I genuinely just believe that I want to provide as much as possible for society. But if you want to look at kind of a quote unquote selfish point of view, say that's not resonating with you very much. The more you provide for society to help other people, the more you're going to get in return. Like, that's how billionaires become billionaires, is because they solved an incredibly hard problem and got financially rewarded for it. So maybe if the philanthropical kind of vision doesn't work for you, you can also be a little selfish and anything that helps humanity, right? Kind of helps you become a better person, helps other people become better people. But yeah, those are two ways of looking at it, from my perspective at least.
This, your quote there at the end, talking about, you know, as long as you're, whenever you're out there, you're like giving certain stuff and you have to give them and you'll get more things back. That reminded me, mm-hmm. That's a paraphrase, of course, but that reminded me of one of my favorite books. It was my favorite book for a while until another book just actually somehow overtook it, which is insane. But it's the seven spiritual laws of success. The second law is the law of giving. And I have this one quote highlighted from it. I want to read you it, which is, yeah. I'll read you actually the paragraph of it because it's really important. But it says, because your body and your mind in the universe are in constant and dynamic exchange, stopping the circulation of energy is like stopping the flow of blood. Whenever blood stops flowing, it begins to clot, to coagulate, to stagnate. That is why you must give and receive in order to keep wealth and affluence or anything you want in life circulating in your life. It's like talking about basically, you know, just whenever you're giving something to other people, it's like you want to give mm-hmm. to other people what you want to receive, and then you'll receive that. There's another passage down here eventually that I don't have it exactly, but it's like, if you want joy, give joy to other people. So give gifts to other people and try and help them with whatever it is that you're doing and how you can provide that to them. And then you'll get that stuff back.
I think, yeah, I think that that's such a powerful quote, like taking it kind of like what I tried to do is to that big extract or like big vision that was said there, like you have to give to get, and then bring it down to like something that's very understandable of like the blood flowing in your body and stuff like that. Like, I think that's a great quote because it really shows like, and then breaking that down to, sorry, I really like the quote, but you know, like if you look at it, that's what a lot of religions are kind of like, that's that kind of saying is almost said in it, most religions, and like a lot of philosophies, and you know, even like taking it from not even from religion, but from a governmental standpoint, like that's a lot of constitutions and everything else like that. So I think boiling it down into that paragraph is a great way to do that, that kind of mentality shift of thinking that way.
Another thing that stood out to me as well is just the first line that it says in that chapter, which is, mm-hmm. technically it's two sentences, but it says like the second spiritual law of success is the law of giving, but then also immediately afterwards says it could also be called the law of giving and receiving. So immediately make sure to put in where it's like, as long as you're giving, then like you'll get in return. And I think that's one of the reasons why I feel like this book was so impactful to me, because as I've tried to give to other people and share things with them, I've noticed that I've attracted better things into my life. So I think your philosophy, especially with your goal and one of the three quotes that you came up with, I think that it's, especially once you explain a little bit more, I feel like that's really impactful and I love it.
Thanks.
All right. I want to wrap up the end of this here and ask you somewhat, you know, repetitive, not necessarily a repetitive question, but, you know, just a general one here. And it's, what do you think is the most important thing that young adults should focus on whenever they're trying to be excellent in life?
I think critical thinking would be, like, if I boil it all down, like, critically thinking would definitely be it. And I was thinking about this, something I might say on here, was, you know, if you heard a study that chocolate's good for you, and they have all these statistics to back you up, you know, you think chocolate's good for you. If Hershey paid for it, do you still trust the study? What if Hershey paid for it to a third party that was completely unbiased? Do you trust the study? And then what if those scientists got a bonus from Hershey because they made a study? Like, you can, like, critical thinking just takes it one step further. You can keep going further and further. But, yeah, I would just say critical thinking. So, like, for me, it was the classes. Like, my first level of critical thinking was, I think I can get an A in this class. So I'm not going to try. And then I was like, then I got to that class. And I was like, well, maybe what's the benefit if I do try and get that A? And then it's like, I should go out of my way to try because of the things that I get out of this. And then, like, kind of where I've developed now is, what things do I want to spend my time on? Like, I don't have the bandwidth to try very hard at everything. So, like, maybe my, like, I want to be fit, but, like, maybe I'm not, like, a bodybuilder or a pro athlete, because for me, that's not my focus in life. So where do I get that highest leverage, lowest time spent for highest result, in taking that one step further and going down that path of critically thinking about everything I do from a time standpoint?
I love it. I think the more that I've started to think about things and question them, but not overthink them, I've been able to really develop more of like different mindsets, and it's been able to push me in the right direction. I think developing those critical thinking skills has been very impactful. Is there anything else that you'd like to add for us wrapping it up here?
Yeah, if you guys want to check out Motive, the startup I'm working on, we have a newsletter and a website. It's just YW Motives for What's Your Motive, but ywmotive.com. And we have a newsletter and stuff like that. So if you want to check it out, feel free to do that.
I'll definitely check it out for sure. But
cool.
I don't know if it's going to make it in or not.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Jaden, I appreciate you coming on. I've had a fantastic time talking to you. It's always a blast whenever I get to sit down with you. Maybe eventually I'll be out in Cincinnati and I'll meet you in person. But
yeah, that'd be great.
I hope you enjoyed another episode of Exceptional Undergrads. If you found inspiration in today's episode, head on over to our website, exceptionalundergrads.com, for all the resources and show notes from this episode. We're always looking for new undergrads to feature in future episodes, so if you'd like to be featured potentially, visit the Apply Here page on our website, fill out the application, and we'll get back to you. And as always, stay exceptional.